Vernelle Bonnery stars in the new Prince Music Theater revival of St. Louis Woman as the jockey Lil Augie. He also wrote, directed, and starred in the hit show One More Time and its sequel Furthermore and the musical fable Stagger Lee. He won an Obie Award and an Outer Critics Circle Award for his portrayal of Jelly Roll Morton in his show Jelly Roll. Bonnery has appeared in the films Down by Law and Pennies from Heaven, and he performed on two of the programs in Fresh Air's American Popular Song series. I want you to hear his singing before we talk. Since there isn't a cast recording of the new revival of St. Louis Woman, let's hear him singing at the Sacramento Jazz Festival as recorded last month for a forthcoming edition of the public radio jazz series Riverwalk Live from the Landing. Here's Vernelle Bonnery singing I'm Confessin' with pianist John Sheridan and the Jim Cullum Jazz Band.
How I long to tell you that I love you. Love finds a way, so poets say. Every dream I dream is only of you. Come cuddle near and listen, dear. I'm confessing that I love you. Tell me, do you love me too? I'm confessing that I need you. Honest, I do. Need you every moment. In your eyes I read such strange things, but your lips deny they're true. Will your answer really change things, making me blue? I'm afraid someday you'll leave me, saying, can't we still be friends? If you go, you know you grieve me. All my life on you depends. Am I guessing that you love me? Dreaming dreams of you in vain. I'm confessing that I love you over again.
Vernelle, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Because you've, in your own shows, in the shows that you've written and produced, you've really specialized in early jazz and the vaudeville era.
Yeah.
And because some of those songs come out of, you know, like the blackface era, you've had to wrestle with a lot of issues pertaining to how to sing old songs in a contemporary setting.
Yes.
And not to feel like you're either offending the audience or offending yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
In what you're performing. Now, the book for St. Louis Woman was rewritten.
Yes.
In part, I think, because it was considered a little offensive in having this, like, happy-go-lucky cast.
Well, it was very offensive in a lot of cases, particularly when you have things like the idea that a woman, in order for a man, in order to believe that a man loves her, he has to beat her. And that was stripped away.
Huh.
There were lots of moments in it that just, we've grown way past any of that as a group.
St. Louis Woman has an all-African-American cast.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like for African-American actors when a casting call goes out for a musical that has a lot of parts for black performers in it, which is unusual?
It's a celebration and a job opportunity. Unfortunately, just 15 years ago, we had an enormous amount of material that actors and actresses could put themselves into, with You Being and Amos Behaving and One More Time and so many different pieces, but The Wiz, that really, I mean, if you look at what is presented today on Broadway, there are no black shows. And so to resurrect some feasible material, I think, is really necessary.
It must be hard for you as an African-American performer to do the work that you want to do when there's so few parts. for black performers. I'm wondering if you feel that through much of your career, the roles you've gotten or the roles that you haven't gotten have been affected by your color.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. And that's across the board. Mm-hmm. Not only have I been prejudiced against on the African American level, but even, for example, in August Wilson play, when you're casting a family because of being a light-skinned African American, in my case, I can't get the job there, so I'm sort of stuck on both sides.
You'd considered too light for certain black roles?
Yeah, definitely.
Are you told that?
Yeah. Blatantly, I would say.
What do you respond to? What do you say in response?
You just don't do the audition. You just, well, thank you.
And you don't even get to the audition.
I get in, and mm-hmm. they say, well, you know, we really couldn't use you because you're not going to fit with the family, or you're not going to be blah, 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 blah. And so I thank you. Well, you can read anyway if you like. No, I really don't care to. Thank you.
Is this part of what's led you to do so many productions of your own, where you're the writer, you're the lead performer, you do some of the producing for it, the directing? I mean, so you decide what your musical values are going to be, what show you want to do, what era you're interested in, and you don't have to worry about somebody else deciding whether you're right for it or not.
Yeah. Basically, I'm driven by necessity. As a performer, as a writer, as a director, I find the material and or think of the material myself, and then I go for it because I really can't depend on casting directors at this point.
Well, you have had a role recently on Broadway in Cy Coleman's musical, The mm-hmm. Life, and I thought we could play your song from that show. But before we do, tell us a little bit about your role in the show.
Well, the role was that of the bartender. It was about hookers in the 70s on Times Square, and I was the bartender where they all went for a sort of respite. But once a year, I would give this big ball. I was the MC of the ball, and the number was used to close up the first act before intermission. So it had to just come out and kick right from the top.
And was this part written, an ethnic definition for the character? Was the character written as white or African-American, or was it open?
No, I think it was pretty open. Originally on the CD, however, Bobby Short did the Backers CD.
Oh.
And so they wanted somebody that could kind of go with that nostalgic sort of feeling that Bobby has.
This is Vernell Bonnaries from the original cast recording of The Life, music by Cy Coleman.
Everybody save your bunks. Everybody rent your tux. Everybody dress deluxe. We're going to the hookers' ball. Invitations in the mail. Get your baby out of jail. Go ahead, make her bail. You're going to the hookers' ball. We're gonna eat and drink and be merry. We're gonna dance all over the floor. Every party at the party, gonna party like you never party before. Dress yourself as bold as brass. Give yourself a touch of class. Hurry up and move your ass. We're going to the hookers' ball. To New York and San Francisco, they all come from far and near to attend this celebration that is held one night a year. Only those.
Vernell Bonnaries is now starring in the Prince Music Theater revival of the musical St. Louis Woman. It runs through June 25th in Philadelphia. Bonnaries will be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Vernell Bonnaries, the star of the new revival of the Harold Arlen Johnny Mercer musical St. Louis Woman, produced by the Prince Music Theater in Philadelphia. Bonnaries also wrote, directed, and starred in several music revues, including One More Time, Staggerly, and Jelly Roll. Now, Vernell, your own productions have focused on early jazz and vaudeville, music from the earlier part of the 20th century. Why do you gravitate to that era? Is it music that you heard a lot when you were growing up, or something you developed a taste for later?
Well, I think that it's sort of the richest soup that it's where everything sort of grew from, the fertile soil. And for me, I just find a great respect for the composers, for the performers at that time. I mean, they were really breaking ground, and it was an exciting moment. And people always refer to the Harlem Renaissance in the 20s and know about the literature of it. But there was a Renaissance period at that point because there was so much defiance and self-respect being built and pride. And I can feel all of that in the music. And the music was a popular music of that time. So they were really in the swing. It wasn't about nostalgia or whatever. And I think also coming from New Orleans, which is the hotbed of jazz and the birthplace, you just go to the real source.
What did you hear growing up in New Orleans?
Oh, I heard from a child, I heard the real bottom line traditional New Orleans music. The brass bands in the streets for funerals, and then we had the party bands for christenings and birthday parties, and people who are now thought of as the legendary founders of the music were people who were playing at that time. And they were older men at that point when I was a kid, but they were still there.
I've never been any place where there's been like a funeral brass band.
Uh-huh.
So to me, you know, when there's a funeral, it's a hearse and a lot of cars going by with their lights on, and it's a really somber occasion. And when you see the funeral procession going by, you just kind of stop and get this chill for a few seconds, even when you don't know the people at all. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you growing up when a brass band would march by playing this great music because there was a funeral?
Well, you realize that it's a celebration of the release of the person from the miseries that life can present if you're African-American living in a segregated southern city. And so it's a party. They've graduated, and they're brought to all the places that they help to make a happy spot. Corner bars and different friends' houses, they're passed in front of it, and sort of a last goodbye and a congratulations that you graduated. I have a book, by the way. I did the text on a photo book from the early jazz funerals. Well, they're actually from the 60s, that Leo Touche, a photographer, took these wonderful pictures, and I did the text on the book. It's called Rejoice When You Die, and that's sort of the bottom line, rejoice.
Did you have any friends or family who had jazz funerals?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. On the way from the church to the gravesite, there is a respect. There's a quiet. But once that body's been released, it's, in other words, buried, then you party.
Now, one of the musicals you're well known for is One More Time, which was meant to be like a revival of a night at the Lyric Theater in 1926. Mm-hmm. And this is what you might have seen on stage there. Mm-hmm. So you do a lot of songs from the 20s, songs I think perhaps that are even earlier.
They're all
from the 20s?
Pretty much the 20s.
Okay. And what are some of the period issues that you had to deal with in doing that show?
Well, I did interviews with people who were still around and had been to that very theater, to the Lyric Theater, and people who had experienced the TOBA circuit.
That's the Theater Owners Booking Association, yeah. Which was alternately known as Tough on Black Asses.
Yes. And
it was like the vaudeville circuit for African Americans.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the issues that I dealt with was the idea of somebody coming in in the colored section of the train, which had to be second only to the cows and the mules. And then getting off the train and not being able to find a hotel because blacks weren't allowed in hotels. And so they had to get to a guest house or something across the tracks where they could stay. And then they come in with this beat-up suitcase, and out of it comes a gown or a suit. And then they hit center stage and become a star. And I think that that's incredible, because part of the whole pumping up of getting to that stage and being there is a treatment that you can receive at the hotel, in the restaurant, whatever. And they got nothing of it, and they were still able to get out there on center stage in a follow spot and hit it and give everything they had. And Bessie Smith could not get into a restaurant, eat afterwards, after a show. And yet that didn't stop them, because they knew they had something to offer. They had talent. They had spirit. They used the performances to say things that were not, that they couldn't say, because there were laws that no more than six blacks could gather in one place at one time without being considered a mob. And so they were, and in church they couldn't say certain things as a community. So they used this space to have social messages, to communicate respect to each other as a unit, to build each other's self-respect. And all those things I tried to add in through the structure of vaudeville jokes. How come we always got to stay at a place where hot and cold water means hot in the summer and cold in the winter? You know, they're complaining, but it's not the black defiance as much as it is through the structure of the black vaudeville joke, the way vaudevillians would treat material.
Well, I happen to have the original cast recording queued up.
Oh, okay.
Why don't we hear you singing Cakewalkin' Babies from the original cast recording of One More Time.
Okay.
Introduce the song for us.
Cakewalkin' Babies. It goes back, Cakewalkin' Babies goes back actually to an earlier period of the cakewalk being a number that slaves would use to make fun of the manners of the white owners. And then it became a vaudeville number. This one, by the time it hit the 20s, this is actually just a number.
Okay, so here's the number.
Okay.
Cakewalkin' Babies, sung by my guest, Vernell Bonnaries.
Cakewalkers may come, cakewalkers may go, but I want to tell y'all about this couple I know. They high-stepping gals and debonair. When it comes to business, not a soul can compare.
Here they come.
Well, here they come.
Look at them damage. They go in some.
They go in some.
Look at them sink a bit. Took of the town. Easing around. Picking them up and laying them down. Dancing fool.
They dancing fool.
That's what they like to call them.
They're in a class of their own.
The only way for them to lose is to cheat out. You may try, but you
I struck the stud.
They don't do nothing different.
The cakewalking babies from
home. It's Cakewalking Babies from the original cast recording of One More Time, which was written, directed, and starred my guest Vernell Bonnaries. And sorry for the couple of scratches you heard there. In my defense, I'll say this has not been reissued on CD. So, and it's from the recordings from the early 80s. Vernell Bonnaries is now starring in a new production of the Harold Arlen Johnny Mercer musical, St. Louis Woman, which is being performed now at the Prince Music Theater in Philadelphia.
I must tell you, Terry, that One More Time, in its glory right now, you know, it's a hit musical and blah, blah. But we started it on $500 in my living room.
Performing in your living room?
We were rehearsing it in the living room, and the band was in the kitchen. And we opened for one night only in New Orleans on $500 to get together the set and the costumes. And to see that growth is just amazing. We wound up with 7 touring companies of it, and a Royal Command performance for the Queen in London, and the West End run, and just amazing what a dream can become.
My guest is Vernell Bonnerice. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Vernell Bonnerice. He's starring in the new revival of the Harold Arlen, Johnny Mercer musical, St. Louis Woman. I want to hear a little bit about your life, Vernell. Tell me a little bit about your family. You're from a Creole family?
Yeah, Creole family in New Orleans.
What does that mean exactly?
Creole in New Orleans means part black, French, Spanish, and American Indian. It's sort of a four-part thing. And we had our own culture, in a sense. We had, the writer for the book of St. Louis Woman was a Creole, Onabotom. And he was friends with Jean Toomer, who was a Creole from New Orleans. So there was a lot of literary people that came out of it. They had their own language, Creole French.
You speak it?
No, my father did, but they used it as an adult language.
Oh, kind of like Yiddish and Jewish houses.
Yeah.
So the kids don't hear.
The kids don't hear you, right. And that's unfortunate. But certainly people know the food, which to me was sort of everyday cooking, but I'm surprised I'm not 300 pounds.
You're sure not.
But we had a culture with music. Jelly Roll Martin was a Creole, and it had its own standards.
Tell us something more about your parents and their parents.
Well, my mother's name is Gloria Maria Diaz, and so obviously her side is Spanish-oriented. My father was, until last year, Lawrence Bonnerice, from the French side of it. And they were very, very. I mean, the values are extremely based in Roman Catholic tradition, and it's extremely family oriented society. Your uncles and your aunts and the idea that everybody sort of pitched together. There was no such thing as you could have, and the person down the block didn't. It was a very open, giving sort of environment that I grew up in.
What was your attitude toward different ethnic groups, considering how many ethnic groups were in your family alone?
Well, that was the thing. There were so many ethnic groups that you couldn't have a prejudice. My grandmother, for example, my father's mother, was literally from Toulon, France. She spoke only French. She was white, and my father's father was from Haiti, and so he was part black, and he also spoke French. So they moved into this Creole area, and they felt comfortable there. There was no... Creoles were not... They were light-skinned for the most part, but they were not forgiven as far as racial prejudice was concerned. I remember as a child drinking from a colored water fountain, and we always understood that our black blood was first. You weren't excused from anything. You sat in the back of the bus. You did the whole bit. Civil rights time came. I think that a lot of Creoles were foremost politically, as far as getting in lawyers and things like that, getting in and trying to get the laws changed. So we were completely open to white, black, it just didn't matter because they may be your cousin.
Right.
And people chose, sometimes strictly for financial reasons. I remember my aunt, who's still alive in California, she and her sisters would go to work every morning. There was four of them. And three of them would go across the street to a colored cigar rolling factory. They rolled cigars. And she would go across the street to the white one because she made $2 more an hour. And she thought, well, I'm going to go for the money. But on the way home, they'd all get on the same streetcar and get back home. Huh. And it was a choice you made if you wanted to have that pressure in your life of trying to pass. You went on and did that if it made more financial sense for you. Or if you didn't, you didn't.
Do you have people in your family who passed?
Yeah. And some actually went to the point of sort of distancing themselves from the family. I remember at my grandmother's funeral, my father was furious because his two older brothers came to the funeral, and he'd always thought that they had passed for white and left and never really communicated with the family. But actually, they were products of her first marriage to a white guy, and they were white.
It's confusing, isn't it?
So he had to refigure once they told him the real story of it, because he just thought that they were brothers who had passed.
That's funny. Well, let me play another recording of yours. And this is actually something you recorded on Fresh Air when you were doing your Jelly Roll Morton show. And in that, it was basically a music review, and you played Jelly Roll Morton.
Yeah.
Morton Gunnar Larson was the pianist. And you not only sang Morton's songs, but you took excerpts of his monologues from the Library of Congress
yes.
recordings and did those monologues as part of the show. So
yeah.
it was really a great piece. Well, so let's hear your recording of Sweet Substitute from the Fresh Air interview that you did in, I think it was 1992. This has Morton Gunnar Larson at the piano.
Substitute, sweet substitute. She tells me that she's mine, all mine. Does anything I tell her, love is blind. She's got such loving ways, always. Got my head in a daze. She's mighty cute, my new recruit, my sweet substitute. Don't want no regulars, my sweet substitute.
Vernell Bonnaries and pianist Morton Gunnar Larson recorded in the Fresh Air Studio in 1992. Now I'm going to let you go in a second because you have a show tonight.
Yeah.
What's it like for you on the day of a performance? Are there things you try to do or try not to do when you know you're going to be on stage?
You lay low.
That night? Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you eat certain things.
Like what?
Well, you eat fruit and vegetables and no spices or bell pepper or things that will let you know you ate them earlier. You just try to keep everything at a smooth level.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to
no
talk with you.
No pepperoni pizza.
Yeah, really.
Great. Thank you, Terry. It was my pleasure.
Bruno Bonarice is currently in Philadelphia, starring in the Prince Music Theater revival of the Arlen Mercer musical St. Louis Woman. It runs through June 25th. Coming up, rock critic Ken Tucker on what's happening in teen pop. This is Fresh Air.